Welcome to the BizNews Daybreak for Tuesday, the 24th of February, 2026. I'm Alec Hogg. Here's the context you need to win the day. In the freshest overnight news, more Jeffrey Epstein fallout with the arrest of the UK Prime Minister's confidant, Peter Mandelson. Trump tariffs and IBM's turn to get scorched by Anthropic's AI innovations. Plus, a forecast from Nassim Taleb that software bankruptcies are coming. Who's Nassim Taleb? Well, only one of the smartest guys on the planet, the author of Fooled by Randomness, still the book that I give anybody who's interested in learning how markets really work. Well, let's pick up now with Doug Krisner from our partners, Bloomberg.
There is a new wave of uncertainty after the Supreme Court struck down President Trump's emergency tariffs. Today on Truth Social, the president said he'll put much higher tariffs on countries that, quote, play games with a high court ruling. And now we're being told the White House is working to issue a formal directive to increase the global tariff rate to 15%. However, it's not clear if that order will be finalized before the 10% levies are set to go into effect Tuesday at 12:01 a.m. Eastern Time. Separately, the Trump administration is reportedly considering new national security tariffs. The Wall Street Journal reports these levies would target industries such as large-scale batteries, as well as power grid and telecom equipment. They would be enacted under a separate statute. And at the same time today, FedEx filed a lawsuit in the U.S. Court of International Trade seeking a refund of those emergency tariffs after they were invalidated by the Supreme Court. Paramount Skydance raised its bid to buy Warner Brothers Discovery. We are told the new offer improves on the $30 a share all-cash proposal made directly to Warner Brothers shareholders back on December 8th. Now, the revised Paramount offer also addresses some of Warner's earlier concerns. Here's the rub. Back in December, Warner agreed to sell its film and TV studios along with the HBO Max business to Netflix. And if Warner's board sees the new Paramount offer as superior, Netflix will have 4 days to respond. UK police have arrested former British ambassador to the U.S., Peter Mandelson, on suspicion of misconduct in public office. This comes after the U.S. Department of Justice released emails allegedly showing Mandelson forwarding government information to Jeffrey Epstein. Police searched two properties linked to Mandelson as part of their criminal probe. His arrest deepens the crisis, engulfing British Prime Minister Keir Starmer over his decision to appoint Mandelson as U.S. envoy despite known links to Epstein. Mandelson has not been charged, and his lawyer has declined to comment. The equity market pulled back today on renewed anxiety over the impact of AI, as well as uncertainty on U.S. tariff policy. We had the S&P 500 down 1% today. Shares in IBM tumbled 13%. That was after Anthropic said its Claude code tool can help modernize the COBOL software language. Here's the thing. Most of the mainframe computers that run COBOL are made by IBM. Elsewhere, when it comes to the impact of AI, Nassim Taleb, author of The Black Swan, expects bankruptcies for software companies.
The effect on the stock market, as you realize, that the previous rally that we had was driven by a very small number of names. And now we probably have some rebroadening effect, some redistribution. But a lot of the gains in the stock market, okay, are going to be eradicated by that. So this is why we're at a juncture of a lot of instabilities across many domains.
That is Nassim Taleb speaking to Bloomberg in Miami. Anthropic is offering some current and former employees the ability to sell shares in the company at a valuation of about $350 billion. We are told Anthropic has lined up between $5 billion to $6 billion for this share sale. Outside investors will buy insider shares in a tactic that has become important in a competitive landscape for hiring in artificial intelligence. On Wednesday, we'll get results from NVIDIA. After the bell, we have a preview from Bloomberg's Charlie Pellett.
It'll be closely watched as always, and it is the next test for artificial intelligence. John Vinh is an equity research analyst at KeyBank. He's got an overweight rating on the stock along with a $275 price target.
As memory has outperformed early in the year, I think a lot of investors are going to come back to kind of the leaders in AI, and I think NVIDIA is well poised to start outperforming the rest of the year.
NVIDIA shares are now at $191, and Barclays says NVIDIA's earnings will be seen as a make-or-break moment for big tech's mediocre season so far. In New York, Charlie Pellett, Bloomberg Radio.
In the markets, uncertainty is ratcheting higher. Gold, the big winner, jumping 3% overnight to $5,250 an ounce. I hope you've read the piece on BizNews written by Rishir Sharma, where he explains that gold's old rules are now out the window and it is heading higher. Bitcoin went the other way, lost 4% last night. It's now trading at 63,500. The rand is stable at 16 rand and 1 cent to the US dollar. Both the NASDAQ and S&P 500 lost just over 1% overnight. Some of our favorites taking a hiding, though. On that side, Tesla was down 3%, as was Palantir and Meta, Amazon 2.5%. Apple and NVIDIA went against the trend, NVIDIA ahead of those financial results, as you heard about a little earlier. Well, back to Nassim Taleb now. In a rare public appearance, Bloomberg spoke to him at an event hosted by his company Universa at a conference in Miami. Here's Nassim's thoughts on geopolitical tensions and the oil price.
Do you feel this volatility will continue and people still need to be hedged?
You always need to be hedged because basically these drawdowns are not predictable, easily predictable. We don't have enough volatility compared to the risks involved. With the risk on a tail risk, they don't show early. We have a deficit problem. We have to borrow more and more money every year just to pay for past sins. And then we have this geographic instability, the geopolitical problem. I think that it's not safe. So let's forget about current volatility. It's not representative of the real tail risks that we are facing.
One of the most important things that investors are watching, tensions between Iran and the United States.
Yes.
The main risk right now is that if Iran blocks the delivery of oil from the Gulf Coast, some people are saying that the price of oil can spike to as much as $100. How big of a risk is that for you?
The first thing is it has been very hard during history, particularly with oil, to predict the effect on event on prices. I remember the first Gulf War, a lot of people were predicting a war by buying oil. And of course, the war was correctly predicted, but oil collapsed. So we don't know. Oil is very unpredictable. But let me say one thing here. The world today, the Western world, the United States and Europe, cannot afford another oil shock like the one we had in the 1970s. For those who remember what happened then, it's in both inflation, stagflation that we had, and inflation, commodity-driven inflation, that is not easy to remedy with monetary policy. So you can name anybody. You can bring Albert Einstein to the Fed, that won't have an effect, okay? So it's not a federal policy thing. So we have to worry about these episodes because you can't do anything about inflation and you also can't do nothing about the stagnation. So we have to worry about, maybe we should talk to people in Washington to try to be less aggressive in the foreign policy.
Let's stay with Iran, and the next red line comes on Thursday. Here's Norman Rule. He's Senior Advisor for Warfare and Terrorism at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. He's a former senior U.S. intelligence officer, and he's in discussion here with Lisa Abramowitz of the Bloomberg Surveillance podcast.
We're approaching an inflection point. Thursday represents the third round of talks, and the United States will be looking to see if Iran's proposal, its written proposal from the Supreme Leader's approval, will show any indication of softening the Iranian position. That is unlikely. But if there is no change in the Iranian position, then we are rapidly approaching the end of the president's deadline for some sort of significant change in Iran's position on its nuclear program, missiles, and regional militia building. That's going to be about March 3rd, based on the original February 20th announcement. The president has all assets in place to conduct a massive air and missile campaign against Iran's strategic capabilities, against which Iran has no credible defense, therefore leaving it only external operational capabilities, which it will likely employ. So Thursday is going to be an indicator of whether we're going to see any significant change in the direction of this initiative.
When it comes to the regime's survival, what is worse, potentially capitulating at the negotiating table or having to deal with a military assault?
I think you're touching the heart of the matter here. There is highly likely a significant debate ongoing within Iran on that very question. The president and his advisors are almost certainly attempting to shape that debate through the presence of the U.S. military forces and the diplomatic campaign against Iran, just as Iran is attempting to shift the debate in the United States on this entire initiative through its defiance, its use of only indirect negotiations, its use of engagement with partners and allies. So there are debates within each side as to what the direction of where they take the future of their countries on their engagement with the other.
There's a lot of reporting the president has yet to make a decision. But Norm, given all of your years of experience, have you seen this sort of military buildup, which we haven't seen since 2003, pre-invasion of the Iraq war, and then an executive not decide to have at least at minimum a minimal strike?
Well, to be clear, we have never seen this sort of military buildup in against the Islamic Republic in the history of the Islamic Republic in the United States. We have also not seen this level of military buildup in the Middle East since 2003. We have also not seen this level of military buildup without the United States employing that military buildup at some point. So it's going to require some significant concession by the Iranian government to justify withdrawal of that military contingent.
Back onto the local front now, and when he presents the national budget on Wednesday, South Africa's finance minister Enoch Godongwana will have the benefit of a 50 billion rand in additional revenue. That's due to commodity prices, gold and platinum pumping money into the companies who pump the money into the treasury through taxes. Well, the big question is how this money is going to be used. To help us unpack what to expect and what the financial markets are hoping to see, here's renowned economist Darby Root. He'll be at the BizNews conference as well, March the 10th through the 12th. There are still some tickets if you want to join us. Here's Darby's take on the tough choices Enoch faces.
I think the big story is certainly the revenue overrun, the commodity cycle, the gold price, platinum prices, all that. That's probably going to give the Minister of Finance, I would guess, 50 billion or so extra. Quite a lot of money. But just to put it in perspective, a 1% increase in VAT will give him approximately 25 billion. So this is the equivalent of about 2% increase in VAT, just roughly speaking. So we'll see what the number is that he's going to come up with. And so that I would say is the big story.
What do we look for in this budget that is going to guide us to whether the country is going in the right direction or not?
Let me tell you what I'm a little bit concerned about, and one should always be a little bit worried about that. There is huge pressure on the Minister of Finance. There always will be. There always is. On the Minister of Finance on to spend money on A, B, and C. Everybody wants more money for something somewhere. And many people or many of these other ministers, they've got very good cases that they are bringing to the Minister of Finance to get more money. And unfortunately, what happens quite often, if there's some sort of windfall revenue like, but we're probably seeing at the moment, that money will be directed to something that is very important at that moment. Maybe an increase in salaries here and there, or maybe some give more money to Eskom or give more money to the municipalities or whatever. And that's the danger here. And that's the danger of a windfall to any finance minister anywhere in the world. The only way that you can really get politicians to spend less money is to make sure they have less money to spend. And so in a way, it's good news, but that means he will get more money. And if there's more money, then certain expenditure items, like, for example, this COVID grant will become a fixed expenditure item. That's probably what's going to happen. So that is something. It's a good news to overrun the revenue, but there's a downside to that as well. So what are the signs? I think some of the signs that I certainly hope for, or some of the things that the Minister of Finance can do, is to use this windfall to cut some of these very, very damaging taxes. Like, for example, corporate taxes, company taxes. We've got corporate taxes at 27%. That is just far too high. We need to cut back on that. We need to reduce on that. We have to adjust the tax brackets of personal income taxes. They haven't had the taxpayer, the salary earner, hasn't seen any significant changes to for bracket creep. So inflation actually pushed the taxpayer up into higher brackets for many years now. We need to do something about that. But overall, if I was the Minister of Finance, I will start with a program to dramatically simplify the total tax regime in South Africa. It is hopefully expensive. It is very, very complicated. It is very, very unfair. So I would certainly overhaul the whole tax environment. But if there's one single number that I think that the market will look at, well, two numbers. The first one is the fiscal deficit, and I think the fiscal deficit will look better than originally estimated by the Minister of Finance. We're probably talking about the fiscal deficit just below 4%, which is still far too high, but it's not as bad as where it was. And the second number is the Minister's expectations in terms of the debt to GDP ratio. And there, alas, the previous years, we simply didn't believe him, rightfully so. And the reason was there were various reasons for that. But this time around, I think the financial markets will actually, if he says he's going to stabilize the debt to GDP ratio at 78% in 2 years' time and then bring it down to 77 and lower, I think the markets this time around will agree with him. And I think we're going to see it in things like bond yields coming down even further. And we could even see it in the rand appreciating and doing a little bit better as well.
Another of the big stories in South Africa is the Madlanga Commission and then the ad hoc investigation in Parliament. Well, are these turning the critical issues into a soap opera driven by a hunt for TikTok likes? Sometimes you feel so, particularly when you watch the live transmission of these commissions, where those who have the spotlight, their 15 minutes of fame, seem to love grabbing the attention, and perhaps they've thought about it a lot beforehand by telling us these little turns of phrase that they appear to have considered very well. Well, Chris Steyn, my colleague at BizNews, interviewed Ian Cameron. The full interview is up on the website. There's lots of fascinating stuff. But in this bit, he describes the sheer scale of corruption as a seemingly infinite can of worms. But Ian remains cautiously optimistic about the investigative teams that are currently making arrests. Ian Cameron is the chair of the Parliamentary Committee on Police, and he will be at the BizNews conference as well. Another good reason to join us.
After extensive hearings, before the ad hoc committee into police and political capture, what is your take?
Yeah, so Chris, first of all, I think no one is surprised about what we're experiencing or seeing through the Madlanga Commission and the ad hoc committee. Maybe I can comment on the ad hoc committee first. I think the ad hoc committee has mostly served its purpose. I personally didn't agree with the extension of the ad hoc committee. I think we could have managed time far better than what we did. And to many, in all honesty, it feels to me like it's become a bit of a soap opera. If I watch the replays of a day's questioning, it feels to me like some members, and they can be angry with me for saying so, but they chase TikTok likes and not they're not looking for the merit of it. So I'm disappointed in that. I think it could be far more disciplined and far more valuable than just doing, you know, frivolous questioning. I must also wonder whether some of the witnesses that will still be called actually will add value to the process. But nevertheless, that is beyond me, and it's not my decision to make. It's something that the committee must make. That's just those are just my thoughts. You know, in terms of the commission, I think it's been managed in the long run far more effectively. The fact that there are already teams in place, arrests, warning statements, and so on, is somewhat promising to me. So I'm carefully optimistic about it. I'm concerned that possibly some of the people on those very teams haven't been vetted or audited properly. The reason I say that is just because, you know, year on year, we hear every single police minister, even the new acting minister, speaking about lifestyle audits every year with the SAP's annual plan and the report. We hear about lifestyle audits. Yet, if those lifestyle audits were done, the large majority of senior officers that we're now seeing being implicated in all of this corruption would likely not have been in the positions that they are in. So it goes to show that they never did the audits that they were meant to do. It makes one feel a little bit depressed that it just keeps going. You know, it's this can of worms that was opened that just seems infinite. But that being said, we have to start somewhere. So I'm carefully optimistic about the Madlanga Commission. I am optimistic about the report that could come out of the ad hoc committee. It's going to be interesting to see what comes out of there. What's positive about it is that a lot of it will be referred to the relevant portfolio committees to follow up. So I'm excited for what gets referred to the police committee and for the work that we can possibly get done on that.
And now you have the edge. For the full interviews and the details behind these stories, head over to biznews.com or just look around BizNews Radio. You'll find all of the information you could possibly need to get yourself prepared to seize the day. I'm Alec Hogg. Thanks for starting your morning with us. I'll be heading to Cape Town this afternoon, and you'll be in the capable hands of my colleagues for the next couple of days. Reason, I'll be in lockup tomorrow morning this time, and that is ahead of the national budget, the big day for state finances, and something that we should all be paying a lot of attention to because it's our taxes after all. Be back with you though on Friday morning, but as mentioned, you are in very capable hands for the next couple of days with the Daybreak. Enjoy.